Greetings, I'm John Duvall. Welcome back to another Truth Factor discussion. We're going to jump right into our study today. We are continuing to look at five things that every new preacher should know. And what we found out last week is that it was very difficult to preachers to stay on topic. And not too surprising, but we kind of got into that. What we talked about last week had to do with make time for your family and yourself. It is admirable to be devoted to the local congregation in the work of the Lord. I should say devoted to the work of the Lord and working with the local congregation. But you still have, if you're married and if you have children, you have, still have your responsibilities there. And so that was the essential point to that we were making with that first point. But we spent the whole study about that and other things kind of interconnected with it. So if you didn't watch last week's study, we encourage you to do that. But what we're going to do this morning is go ahead and jump into continuing five things. Or here's another title, and I think this is what got us so scattered a little bit. Five things I wish someone had told me before I began preaching. That's kind of an alternate title, and I think that may have triggered a lot of additional thoughts. But it was a good study, I think so. But we do need to continue. So, Brian, if you would, the second one's pretty straightforward. So I'll throw it to you if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, Brendan Ashby brought this one in, and it was one worth considering. Brendan brought up the idea, something he wishes he had learned sooner or early on, is to take it slow. And he kind of clarified what this was. He said, you desire to say yes to everything and bite off more than you can chew, so take it slow. It was kind of a neat analogy, and probably everybody can think of, yeah, I probably, you know, rush too fast, too hot and heavy on the sense of how to, you know, solve every problem and confront every issue. Brendan gave some good examples. He says, deciding to preach through Romans on a whim, even if you're not very familiar with it, or saying yes to every request of the members, or trying to fit everything you possibly know about a subject into your sermon. There's a lot of different examples I think we can think of things that, you know, might have been put us in the deep end of the pool or over our head that are easy to step into. And so it is good advice to say, you know, we don't have to solve every problem right away, that we're not expected to have a great knowledge. And even though sometimes people talk to us as though that's their expectation of us, the Apostle Paul told Timothy that even after years and years of having been a preacher and even having had miraculous gifts in some fashion, because he does mention having hands laid upon him, that he still had to study to show himself approved and to be a workman who need not be ashamed. So it's worth it for all of us to consider this important point, to take it slow, to try to accomplish the tasks that are in front of us and not to bite off too much right away, but, you know, to move into things so that we're a lot slower in how we handle it.
Brian, I think that was, you know, looking back when I started preaching, that would be one of the biggest lessons to go back and tell yourself. You know, it's good, like someone said, well, I'm going to preach through Romans. I've been preaching for 2 years, and I've got it figured out. I've read the right commentaries. I know all about Romans. I'm going to preach through it and take 2 years to do it and everything. And then what you find is, like, 10 years later, you look back, you're going through your next study of Romans, like, what was I thinking? You know, you need to allow yourself time to grow. And you said something else, too. You don't have to use every verse in the Bible that deals with a particular subject when you preach every sermon that deals with that subject. Truth is truth, whether it's one verse or it's five verses, unless those five verses help to expand a little bit in the understanding. You're excited, you're earnest about it, but you've got to give yourself time to grow. And that's a very take it slow. Bobby, thoughts about that?
No, I think that's correct. Unless you're again dealing with a real in-depth study where each point has seven subpoints, but I would say that mainly for lectures, you know, where you've got an hour to go and everybody's ready to listen for an hour. But I would preach far too long when I first started preaching. And I would even preach fast. And they said, slow down. But then I got to an hour and a half. And so they, okay, speed back up. But I decided to just start cutting them shorter. And I try to keep it at 25 minutes, 30.
It's not a marathon. You know, and attention spans, especially in our culture today, are shorter, you know. So it's, you'll always have another Sunday to continue the subject. And if you don't, well, they, you know.
Right.
You know, they should know or should continue to learn. We've got a comment from Jimmy real quick. Let me bring that in for just a second. Jimmy says, there it is. Even the greatest preachers will never know everything about a verse or chapter or book of the Bible, and many will tell you they are still learning. And that's a good point. You continue to grow. You continue to add to that knowledge. Yeah. And let's see. Let's bring a couple more real quick. Chris Kramer, he says, I used to be frustrated that I wasn't as knowledgeable or as good of a preacher as some preachers older than me. I had to realize that it took them time to become that, and it would take me time too. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. Let's see. Buddy, he says you will get burnt out really quick if you don't say no from time to time. You know, especially depending on your personality. Some people hit the ground running on being able to take control of their lives, but others are nice and they want to say yes to everybody. And those things like that can really get you swamped. And Chris says, still waiting for that time to come. And Caleb says, no one complains when you preach short. Bob had to step away for a moment, but he'll be back here in a little bit, though. All right, let me see. Interesting. Okay, let's go ahead then and go on to the third one. The third one I'll go ahead and bring in. So in this particular one, we have... This one was Tom's. And Tom says, learn from the work of faithful preachers. Now, there is a very important point to this. We understand that preachers of today were not inspired. We know who were inspired. The apostles, the prophets of old, they were inspired by God. But understand that there are knowledgeable men. Just as we talked about a while ago, you got to take it slow. There will be a time as a new preacher that you will grow and you'll be the old preacher. And you're going to have young preachers coming to you wanting to have answers to questions, help them to understand things just like you needed to understand. Years ago, there was an older, more experienced preacher that I called to ask a question regarding a particular subject. I don't remember now what it was, something I was struggling with in the scriptures there. And he kind of laughed a little bit. He says, you know, when I was young and thought I knew all the answers, no one asked me what I thought. But now that I'm older and I'm not really certain if I do know all the answers, that's when people are wanting to ask me questions. So you can learn greatly from men who are older, men who are more experienced. Just remember that they are not inspired, and sometimes they can be wrong. We could talk about several preachers within the church who, when you go back and look at their writings, you find out they weren't right. You find out that there were things that they were in error about, and that's where you're learning. When you're learning, you begin to disseminate and discern and establish for yourself. The problem, guys, is that sometimes you'll have individuals who will preach what they're told to preach, okay, and they never learn to think for themselves. I've seen some preachers who, after, you know, 20 years, 30 years of preaching, they're still making statements that they made in the very beginning, and the statements are not accurate, but it's what they've always said, what they were told to, that they had to say. They didn't grow for their own self within their study habits. So it's good to learn from faithful preachers, but make sure that you learn to discern, you know, and grow and not be afraid to grow from that knowledge. Yeah. Any thoughts? Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know, I talked to a brother once. Dear brother's an elder now, or has been. I don't know if the congregation still has elders, but I've known him since he was like 17, years old. I knew him when before he went to FC. And now he's got a family of his own. He's got grandkids. He's an elder, or was an elder, may still be. And we were talking one day about his commentaries. He said, I don't bother with commentaries. They were written by uninspired men. But I'm thinking, every sermon he ever heard was from an uninspired man. And we can learn from uninspired men. They help us to think. And that's what we need to be going to them for. Not for the answers, but for how they arrived at their answers and how we can study to come up with the answers ourselves. And, you know, I use other people's sermon outlines, but I always try to make it my sermon instead of just preaching what they preached. And sometimes I think, how in the world could he sustain that point by that verse? I'll either change the verse or take the point out if I don't think it can be sustained. But, you know, once you've got a faithful preacher, and a faithful preacher doesn't mean that he's right about everything. It just means he's got good study habits. He's faithful to the truth. And he, like you, wants to understand the truth better. And he's striving to understand the truth better. And he's trying to help others understand the truth better. And that should be that kind of person is a mentor to us, or can be and should be. We can be his mentee, even if he doesn't know that he's our mentor. But pattern our lives after that and be the kind of person that Christian preacher that studies to learn what the Bible says on his own and not just repeat what he has heard other people conclude.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. Brian, you got any thoughts on it?
No, this is all good stuff. You know, when I started preaching, I was all by myself in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico. And pretty quickly, I realized just how much having somebody who had had a better position longer would be encouraging to me. And so I made whatever efforts I needed to travel sometimes and, you know, several hours to visit with just to drop in with somebody with coffee. I will say, let's throw this the other direction to say to older preachers, you know, I wish older preachers that had been around me had realized how badly I needed that. And had maybe even gone to the effort of saying, hey, let me reach out to encourage other people. I think Paul is reaching out a lot to Titus or Timothy to give them some encouragement. I think a lot of times older preachers, and, you know, we focus on the work that's right in front of us, but we ought to be thinking about the other men that we can encourage. I try to think more about that now that I'm shifting roles in my life. And so if a new younger guy comes into our area, I always reach out to them and just tell them I'm glad they're here. And, you know, I'd love to get together and just to say, you know, how can I be an encouragement? Because I really want that encouragement. I still like it. I still want it. But I think you guys have said some important things. Not having a mentor, Bob, as my youth, did that make me demented?
Yes. You were just mentorless.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bob.
Let me say this, John, while we're on this. And Brian Garlock started Answering Religious Error in like 2012. Mm-hmm. And once a week, you know, had the question and answer thing. And Brian Haynes and Krispy Kremer, Chris Kramer, were both listening viewers. And they would make comments in the chat room that were really encouraging. And eventually they joined our team. And they have both been a big encouragement to me, even though they are considerably younger than I am. Their study habits, their knowledge, their understanding, their strong desire to come to a better understanding of anything and everything the Bible teaches has been a big encouragement to me, and I know to every other member of the ARE panel. And so I know that they have been an encouragement to everybody who listens to ARE and Answering Religious Error. And so when I saw that he was on Truth Factor, well, that made me want to be on Truth Factor even more, so I could have more interaction with him. Now we just need to get Chris Kramer on here. If we need another filler.
Well, now that you just revealed something interesting about Brian. That's how Brian got started on Truth Factor. He just, he intentionally joins the chat so he can worm his way into. We had Michael Davis. Well, we've brought on Eric Reynolds, Seth years ago. I mean, they started out participating in the chats, and it was like, hey, come on in. You know, it's, but yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I didn't realize ARE had been around since 2012.
Yeah, that's 11 years now.
Wow.
Or 20. Okay. What's that? Yeah, 11 years.
I thought it was around 2014 or 15, but I couldn't remember.
We took a little break.
Okay.
I'm not sure how long that break was, but when Brian first moved to Texas, he couldn't fit it into his schedule, Brian Garlock. And so we discontinued for a while there, but
yeah.
Eventually.
I met Brian. He had come to 84th Street for their summer preaching program one summer, and he came up and visited with us on a Sunday morning. But I couldn't tell you when that was. I've slept a few times.
Yeah.
Real quick, and we'll move on to the next point. Share another story, Brian. You kind of got me thinking about this. When I first started preaching, Rhonda and I got married in 86. So the summer of 87, I went through a training program in a little town called Thomasville, Alabama, then moved to a small little congregation in Op, out in the middle of nowhere, Alabama. And then from there, we moved to McAllister. None of these cities where I grew up around near Atlanta, you know, so where we moved to, he's out in the middle of nowhere. And so I can understand what you're saying. The idea of desiring to have more knowledgeable preachers come around so you could pick their brains and everything, learn from them. But what I found interesting, and I won't be super critical, but it did bug me. There were a few times that some did come to the area because there was a little church in Haleyville, you know. And so sometimes, you know, there were a few times that, I came up to the Oklahoma City area for a meeting or something to visit. And we'd all be sitting around. And I remember a few times I'm thinking, this is going to be really good. I got a lot of questions. But you know what? What I discovered is many times they didn't want to discuss. Some of them really didn't appear interested in discussing biblical subjects. They were talking about golfing or fishing or things. And I'm like, I've got a question. I'll throw a question out there. And it's touched on for a moment, but then they go on. And that's normally in groups. Now, if there was a single preacher for a meeting, they would always be very helpful in having discussion. So if you're an older preacher and a younger preacher asks you about something, take your time. Give them give them the help they're looking for. Yeah.
I was once told by a dear friend that somebody had told him, Bob, my hand's all right, but all he ever wants to talk about is the Bible. he said, but I would take that as a compliment. I said, I do take that as a compliment. What bothers me is that so many Christians want to talk about everything but the Bible. Why don't we talk more about the Bible? Probably quite a Christian. Some Christians not want to talk more about the Bible in social settings. It's like they reserve that for the Bible class. That's the only time they talk about the Bible. Bible is in preparation for the Bible class.
Yeah.
That's or a good point. In the Bible class. And I just don't understand that mindset.
That's a good point. We should always be trying to grow, you know.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go on to number four. This one is a little more complex. So, by the way, I don't think as soon as we're done, I'll put the outline go to truthfactor.com on the landing page there. Once I update it, you'll see the recording for today. It'll be untrimmed, but you'll see it on the front page there. And beneath that, I'll drop in the outline for this particular study. I don't think I've done that yet. Let me see real quick. Maybe I did last week. Let's see. Yeah, I did. I did not. We'll post the outline this Thursday when we continue this current study. Okay. I'll get it posted then after we're done. But anyway, the next one I want to talk about has to do with exercise, emotional self-control. This is very important. I have known of many preachers who have become unhinged due to a lack of emotional self-control. Looking at the outline there, Paul, Bob, I'm gonna toss the first one here to you. So Paul says, but I discipline my body and bring into subjection lest I have preached to others. I myself should become disqualified. 1 Corinthians 9:27. Let's look at kind of the first section there, Bob. What are some of the first areas we have listed that can become a problem within the life of preachers?
Well, first of all, let me say unhinged is an emotional loss of self-control. But
good point.
I think, you know, you're talking about things on the outline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the family, I think that one was important. We need to get feedback.
Well, no, I'm sorry. Drop down number 4.
Okay.
Under the brief description there. We got a few little subpoints.
Do you mind if I jump in real quick?
No, go ahead.
Over Bob and just say, yeah. I think that the more I thought about this point, the more I wanted to add more and more different thoughts to it, because it was something that is, you know, self-control. I was thinking that really we could have points 1 through 5 on self-control, because I was thinking about preachers need to practice fiscal self-control. We've seen a lot of preachers get in trouble over money. It's easy to do, and a lot of preachers get hurt on that one. And you know, there's a lot of grief and a lot of bitterness over that. Physically, you know, I was surprised Brendan didn't bring this up, because he had made a point some time ago that one thing a lot of preachers neglect is taking care of your physical health. You know, that you don't, you know, do things like exercise or get out, and that when you have these physical decline, you're not prepared for it well. And I always thought that was a good one too. But then I even thought the idea of doctrinal self-control, that sometimes as preachers, we get focused on one subject or one idea to the detriment of all the other things. We don't have that balance of preaching. So one of the things I thought this was a really interesting advice that is probably one of the most substantial pieces of advice we can give to that end. I'll go back. Sorry to jump on top of you there, Bob. I'll let you go ahead and continue.
That's all right. I just completely misunderstood John. You know,
he's not understandable a lot to me either.
Like a pine cord floor. But so, I know most of our people won't know what a Concord was. But
I've been on the Concord.
They've discontinued it. But, you know, we've got to exercise discipline in every aspect. I don't know how I could add too much to what Brian has said. But we need to discipline our Bible study. We need to set aside time for Bible study, to make sure that our lessons are prepared. We need to try to prepare for objections that people might have, questions that people might have. And so there's a lot of discipline involved there. But what Paul, I think, is talking about here is fighting the distractions and the wickedness that he was on the receiving end of, the persecutions. I mean, 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians, both, he talks about his persecutions, especially 2 Corinthians. He really talks about it there, because he's explaining why he has not yet returned to Corinth. And it's because he wanted to wait until those who were causing trouble were dealt with. And they had been dealt with by the time he got there. But as he's writing 2 Corinthians, they still have these false teachers who are building themselves up by tearing Paul down. And so he's explaining that he is not one that thinks he has got it made. He talks about this in Philippians also, chapter 3. But he was constantly exercising discipline. He was constantly exercising not just self-control, but self-examination. He took everything in stride. I mean, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he talks about, I think you might have brought this up last week, John, or somewhere, someone somewhere over the last week brought this up. He was suffering, but it never got as bad as it might have gotten. And he never overreacted to the things that he suffered. And it is so easy for us to overreact to people. I was once told that I was an educated fool. So I had to preach on that the next Sunday. And the person who called me that came forward and repented. So I feel like I handled it in a pretty good way. Because I wasn't really all that educated, much less a fool. But I mean, I don't have a college degree or anything. But at any rate, we just got to keep things in perspective and not let things get to us, whether they're physical, mental, or emotional. And just make sure that we are going to do the right thing in any and all circumstances. To me, that's the basic key to self-control.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. So let's build on that a little bit. The challenges that we face, like what you're describing, what Paul faced, there are times that there is a temptation to react to those, in a way that would be spawned by pride, arrogance, even like what you're talking about, selfishness. Why did I get so mad at that person? Well, because he affected the way that I looked in front of everybody. I've seen people get upset because they were called out publicly or corrected from the, you know, let's say during a Bible class, and someone would throw a point out there that would actually correct them what they were saying. And so instead of saying, you know, you're right, I didn't think about that, it's like, well, I'll come back to that later. And they, how dare they correct me in front of everybody? You know, there are a lot of things that emotionally can be stirred up if we don't have self-control. Paul, in kind of a separate discussion, he talks about anger, wrath, malice, envy, you know, all those things. And you would assume that if someone has dedicated their life to preaching the word of God, that they would have already had these things ironed out and under control. But oftentimes, I mean, they're no different than everybody else. Even if we were to talk about the physical and intimate desires, you know, every preacher is the same. Every male preacher has the same physical desires, the same emotional challenges. They will vary depending on the individual. Some are more sensitive than others. Some are more stable than others. I don't mean that so much in a bad way, but you really have to get control of yourself as a preacher, or else you're going to find yourself not behaving properly, not responding well when you are challenged, when you are questioned. Even if you're right, you still have to maintain a sense of humility and realize, and Tom drops this point, had dropped this point in the outline, you don't know it all, you know, and recognize you very well could be wrong. And I think looking at the way Paul dealt with his challenges goes a long way to help us understand, you know, the way that we should handle our challenges. I like to have seen how Peter reacted when Paul called him down to his face regarding his hypocrisy.
Yeah.
You know, did he do this? Well, not again. Or, you know.
I have a hard time thinking that, but yeah, we're not told it because that was not the point. How he reacted was not the point. The point was he had sinned and he needed to be faced with it, and he was faced with it by another apostle. And by explaining that, Paul showed that he did not consider himself to be under Peter. Yep. His apostleship was equal to that of Peter. And Peter would have just as much right bringing Paul to task if Paul had been the hypocrite as Paul had to bring him to the carpet, so to speak. And you know, one of the problems I see among preachers too, not just preachers, but a lot of people, if there's one thing they're proud of, it's their humility. And that is so sad. There, and I've heard this guy discussed at, or called being meek to a fault. It's not meek, really. Not meekness, as the Bible describes meekness. It's really weakness disguised as meekness. Look at me, how meek I am.
That's interesting.
But you can be meek and you can be firm in defending the truth at the same time. You can be humble and defend the truth at the same time. Paul is very humble. Look at how much Paul thought about his past life. Almost every epistle, he talks about what he had done against the cause of Christ. That kept him humble. But he still asked the congregation to pray for him that he might be forceful in his presentation of the gospel. And then here he is fighting within himself to keep himself humble and to make sure that he himself is not disqualified after having preached to others.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. There's so much in this very, very, very difficult conversation because there's so much there we could unpack. But go ahead, Brian, though. Sorry.
The last comment I want to make, I think a lot of this is summed up in the qualifications of the evangelist that Paul gives Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Beginning of verse 22, he says, to flee youthful lusts, pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. So first of all, he's saying, have some self-control. Don't get derailed by desires and things like that. 23, he says, avoid foolish and ignorant disputes, knowing they generate strife. Verse 24, a servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient in humility, correcting those who are in opposition. I always like to grab these passages and say, here are the qualifications of an evangelist. And they wrap themselves up around the idea of somebody who can take control of themselves, that they can perhaps even to say take some abuse, to be patient, to be careful and caring. I think that these are verses that speak to the language of the self-controlled person, and that Paul puts a great deal of emphasis for an evangelist on these verses. As I said, these are our qualification verses of what we have to be in order to be an evangelist. And so much of them are patience and gentleness, and kindness, and the idea of anger and wrath and losing self-control is completely the opposite of that. By the way, you can look at Titus chapter 2 or 1 Timothy chapter 4 and see these things restated when Paul says, Titus, you need to be, Timothy, you need to be, the same things, same things.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Any other thoughts or comments on, well, actually, I do have a comment we need to bring in real quick. So let's see. There we go. So bringing in Jimmy's, what did Jimmy say? Jimmy said something profound. Actually, it's really good. He says, I think in my humble opinion, it all starts with pride. If a preacher or anyone in the church for that matter is prideful, then it should be called out. I mean, that's right. Pride is one of the greatest hindrances to humility, to us serving the Lord properly, to serving one another properly, to showing love towards one another. It is a great hindrance. Yeah. He goes on to say, not to get under that brother's skin, but rather to let them know that, hey, what was said may be off base. Can we take a look at that passage or topic? Good approach. Very, very good approach.
I don't know if it's come up, but in the outline, Proverbs 16, 18, and 19, pride goes before destruction. That is, it precedes it.
That's right.
And a haughty spirit before a fall.
Yeah.
And so we destroy ourselves or on the road to destruction when we begin to have pride. We're on the road to falling when we develop a haughty spirit. Better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud.
Yeah.
Because the spoils we will gather, we will divide, will not be spiritual.
Proverbs 16, 18 through 19. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real quick, as a segue, you mentioned, or not segue, but as a point, you mentioned the outline. If you want to go to truthfactor.com and bring it up there, I've refreshed the page so that this outline we're talking from, unless Brian adds anything else to it, it's available for download. And if he does, I'll just refresh the link and you can go back and refresh it. But yeah, that's a good point, Bob. Let's see. Oh, I know I was going to ask you real quick. So do you think, especially in our culture, I mean, it's been bad enough in the past, but do you think in the culture, religious culture today, that there is a stage, for lack of a better word, whereby preachers are faced with the grave or a great temptation to be prideful? I mean, you think about how the level of performance-based much preaching has become. Think about the denomination world, the stages, the lights, depending on where you go, the lasers and the smoke and all that other stuff. It all becomes a matter of presentation, a matter of show. And I'm not above saying we should polish our craft. And in other words, if my responsibility to convey the teaching of the scriptures to someone, I need to convey it in the best way that I can. And so I need to work with that. But many times it's all about performance. It's all about show. And that feeds into this pride, this arrogance. I mean, I guess my point is, do you think it's more tempting today for preachers to walk that path than maybe it was 100 years ago?
I think so. We've been through this here in Macon, where I was the only one that could lead singing. Or was comfortable leading singing.
Mm-hmm.
Some we couldn't get to lead at one point. I was the main Bible class teacher and I was the preacher. And we had this young child, and I just hoped that she did not get the idea that this was the Bob Myhan show. And I think some preachers may be thinking, you know, this is my show. And there's nothing wrong with reading commentaries, nothing wrong with reading religious books written even by not just by uninspired men, but by non-Christians. We can learn from them.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with the idea of just quoting these men like you would quote the Bible. Just internalize what they say is true, what they say that you have proved to be true from your study of God's word, and then say it in your own words.
Yeah.
And so don't just memorize the text, whether we're talking about the Bible text or the text of a religious book that's not the Bible. Internalize it, or internalize the truth that we get from it, and then express that truth in our own words. And I think that people will pick up on that I'm not claiming to be inspired. I'm just speaking from my study, from my experience, etc. And it's just some of these writers that preachers are quoting from, gospel preachers are quoting from. I don't think they've quoted from My Best Life Now yet, but Joel Osteen's book. But, you know, they're quoting from all these religious writers that claim to be Christians who are not Christians, as if they were inspired writers. And I just think that's sad.
Yeah. Someone may make a point that you've not thought about and may be spot on, but it doesn't mean you quote them to say, now here's the authority that shows that this is the way you should view this verse.
Yeah.
You know, learn from what they said, go back, verify it, look at it, study it. And if truly that's what it appears to you that is being said there, then state it. I mean, now if you're going to quote them, then you need to give them credit for what they said, you know, or else you become plagiaristic, I guess. But don't say, well, this great preacher of old who was off on everything but this one point, he's my source of authority that shows that this is what this means. And that's, you know.
The key, I was told a long time ago, the key to originality is forgetting your sources.
Did you learn that from Brian?
No, it was somebody else. But I don't think he's preaching any longer, at least not regularly. But I've also heard it said that if you quote from one man, you're a plagiarist. If you quote from many men, that's research. Even just quoting from many men, I mean, you've just quoted the men. And again, we need to internalize the truth that we can learn from them.
Yeah.
And then express that in our own words to the best that we can so that the people we minister to can understand the truth.
That's a good point. Any other thoughts on this? Okay. So what someone says, what were y'all just talking about? We're talking about exercising control over our lives, the way they learn, the way we behave, the way we respond, the way that we grow. Brian did add a point in particular that you'll see in the outline when you download it, but not to be over-focused on one particular idea to the detriment of other things. I have seen, you've seen preachers and known preachers who become a specialist on the home, or, you know, this really where they put all their focus and studies. But then when you hear them talk about other subjects, they may be lacking a little bit, and you need the balance there of the sum of the scriptures is what you're trying to grow in ability to be able to handle. Yeah. All right, let's see. Sorry, I'm reading a comment here.
I think we're ready to go to the last comment, if that yeah. sounds good, John.
Yeah,
we'll go ahead and pick up and grab this last comment.
go ahead, Brian. I'll throw it over.
So the last one was mine. And I don't think it's, you know, it's probably not the best one of all this list because there were a lot of really good ones, but it's one that kind of sticks with me that I think is a valuable thing. And that is learn to respect and earn the respect of the people that you're with. One thing that I wish I had a better sense of, or at least something that has served me well when I did have a sense of it, is the idea that a preacher's success working with a group a lot of times is going to be directly proportional to the respect he has for them and that they will have for him. I've seen a lot of preachers that just do not respect the brethren that they're with. They'll talk about them badly. They'll put them down. They'll constantly be angry or disgusted or offended by them. And it's kind of important to understand that attitude isn't really reflective of the brethren, but how we perceive brethren. You know, I always like to use Jesus as an example to say, when Jesus looked upon the masses of people, his disciples saw people that they wanted to keep away, you know, get out of here, keep these people back. The Bible says Jesus looked upon them with compassion because he saw sheep without a shepherd. And the important idea there is that it's about perspective. In other words, how you look at people and reflects an idea of your respect for them. And a preacher ought to have some respect for the people that he is working with, the congregation that he has been, he has chosen to take on the role of an evangelist that he has placed himself within. He ought to have respect for him. And a lot of times, unfortunately, people say, well, you know, respect has to be earned. And, you know, if they're not earning it, they shouldn't get it. But that's not exactly true. That's not a biblical idea. We can give someone respect even if they don't have it. I mean, the Bible talks about wives respecting their husbands. And the implication is absent of the fact that they probably haven't earned it. I've not earned the level of respect and submission the Bible tells my wife she has to give to me. She's not earned the level of love that the Bible says I'm to give to her. That's not relevant. It's not about earning those things. It's about giving those things. Preachers need to respect their brethren. They need to esteem them. They need to see the positive and the good in them and support that. Just recently in a men's study, we were studying Barnabas. And Barnabas, of course, is known as the son of encouragement. One thing about Barnabas is it seems as though Barnabas could look at a situation and he didn't see the problems. He saw the benefits. So he goes to Antioch, for example, in Acts chapter 11. He sees a lot of Gentiles becoming Christians. A lot of people just saw that as a problem. You know, Gentiles, they're the worst. You know, they you have to watch where you put your hand or they might eat it because Gentiles eat everything. They just weren't well liked. Barnabas saw and had esteem and respect for them and say, boy, we can really become something great. And, you know, we need Saul of Tarsus. That was always a crazy thought to me that was the person he thought they needed. But he said, this is what we need to do. And this is what we need to move forward with. And it's because he has a great deal of respect and esteem. Preachers need to respect and esteem the people that they're working with. They need to see the best in them. They need to develop the positive gifts that they have. That's their purpose. A corollary to this is something that Paul Adams threw out there. And Paul Adams talked about the idea of also working to gain the respect of the brethren. And his statement was, and this is to quote directly from Paul Adams, I guess what I'm saying is, do the things that preachers often say that it's not my job, just because you care and it needs to be done above and beyond. You know, it's a lot of times where somebody says, well, you know, the preacher shouldn't water the lawn. That's my job. I don't think there's anything that's not your job. I think that if Jesus can get down on his hands and knees and wash feet, there's probably nothing you could say is not your job as an evangelist. You're going to do all sorts of things. And what you're really doing is garnering respect so that you can, at a later time, call that respect as a, you know, as a weight of payment of some kind to compel people to find the truth and to do the right things, to earn that respect so that they will then in turn at that right time. And respect is something that costs a lot. In other words, you're earning it by those little jobs, those little things that you're doing that aren't your job, so to speak, but what you're actually doing is building up your respect. And I think Paul's point there, Paul Adams' point, is really good. Yeah. That there shouldn't be such a thing as not my job, because you want to gather the respect of others. Everything should be your job.
You know, speaking about Paul there in that context, when Paul came back to Jerusalem 3 years after he was converted on the road to Damascus, the brethren didn't want to have anything to do with it. Because after all, the last thing they saw about him was he was trying to destroy the Lord's body, the Lord's people. But Barnabas knew that Paul had seen the Lord. He knew about Paul's preaching in Damascus. He knew that he had disputed against the Hellenists, which were Jews who had absorbed the Grecian culture. They were not Greek. They were not Gentiles. They were Jews that absorbed the Grecian culture. And he felt like, I'm thinking, this is why Saul came to his mind in Antioch. Saul knows how to deal with Hellenists, so he would know how to deal with Gentiles. And it would be the Hellenists that probably would be giving them the trouble over these Gentile Christians, not making them proselytes before, you know, the Jewish proselytes, before preaching to them. But he saw the potential of Saul in that situation based on the potential or the evidence that Saul himself had presented. And matter of fact, when Saul was in Damascus and preached to the Hellenists, they attempted to kill him.
Yeah.
That did not discourage Paul. He still came to Jerusalem. He wanted to be a part of the church there. And he went in and out among them, and he preached the gospel. But then they plotted against him, and so the church secreted him out and sent him home for his protection. And so Barnabas knew where he was. He knew what he was capable of. And he says, Saul needs to be used, and I can use him in this.
That's a good point. One of the hardest things to do is to define what is let me rephrase that. From a biblical standpoint, it's real simple to define what a preacher's responsibility is. Okay, preach the word. But when it comes to working with a local congregation, it's not like some job application where you say, okay, I wasn't hired to do this. I wasn't hired to do this. I wasn't hired to do this. Like you've already said, I mean, a willingness to go above and beyond, as Paul said, and to treat others with respect, put others to work. I like what Bob was saying there about how they looked at Paul and, you know, Barnabas did, Brian as well, I think was talking about that. And I don't know, a lot of things we could go into with that, but I think the lesson is very straightforward. Have a respect for one another. Yeah. Jimmy and makes a good point. He says, let's bring this up here real quick. Jimmy says, Jesus gave lots of folks respect that never showed respect to him. Who is that going back to what Brian said, that his wife, hasn't done enough for him to, you know, love her without a command or a demand to love or something. What'd you say, Brian?
Oh, I was saying the idea that in Ephesians 5:5, he talks about husbands and wives. Yeah. So you're going to get me in trouble here. So.
That's right. When you were saying that, I thought he's going to get himself in trouble with what he's saying. Yeah, but you're not wrong, though. So the idea of the wife submitting to the husband, that has nothing to do with one's better than the other one. It has to do with the role. You know, it doesn't have to do with deserved or earned. It has to do with responsibility. And, but not to rehash everything that's already been said. It's a good point. Good point. All right, let's see. Any other thoughts or comments about that? So I'm going to do a generalization here. We've had a couple of comments coming through the chat room. We have to make certain that we always, and now we're talking about new preachers, but old preachers as well. And now this also applies to all Christians. We have to make certain that when we are studying, we're studying the Word of God to see what the Word of God has to say. Can we learn from other people? Yes. Okay. We can learn from other people, whether they are Christians or not. If they make a good point about a verse that is clearly true within that context and you've been wrong about it, well, then you can learn from that. It doesn't mean that you don't look at a person and say, well, because they're not faithful to the Lord, everything they say is not valid and accurate. We're studying the Word of God. We're looking to try to gain a better understanding. And sometimes someone may have a better understanding than we do. We have to make certain, though, that we, in so doing, don't immediately assume that all beliefs are right and all beliefs are accurate. Again, we ourselves, I could be wrong on a point. Does that make every area that I'm correct about null and void? No. Does it mean I need to change the way I'm thinking on that point? Absolutely. And if I'm not a child of God, then I am out of fellowship with him and I've got a long road to get to where I'm right with God. But it is a concept. We have a responsibility of standing up for the truth. But we also have a responsibility to learn and make sure that our position is accurate on the truth. And in order to do that, sometimes we have to learn from others who have a better understanding of these things. And when I was young, I was one of those preachers that didn't think any of the books of men were valid. It just has to be the Bible. Just stick to the Bible and you eventually figure it out. I think I would have been a little bit farther along in certain studies had I taken the time to have consulted men who were more knowledgeable than me. If that makes sense. All right. Any other thoughts or comments? Okay. I guess not. Bob's talking.
I sure hope you would be farther along had you done that.
Yeah. Well, we're going through Revelation right now. And that's one of those books that I've avoided, to be very honest. I mean, I've read through it, but trying to come to an understanding, it just rattles my brain. Because you could go to like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the New Testament helps to understand those. It takes a little bit of time, but the New Testament really helps. But there wasn't a writing post the writing of Revelation where a prophet comes along and explains what John saw. Okay. So and there are so many different viewpoints on it that you kind of get confused because you know that not everybody's going to be right. And if I follow this fella, I'm going to end at this point. But then what about these questions if I follow this person? And so, This is one of those cases where I probably should have started this 15 years ago. And then I'd be at a different point. Would I be at the right point? I don't know. I could be like Brian and agree with him on things. But you got to start at some point and be patient with yourself. Take time. Have a proper discernment of things. But, you know. All right.
At the risk of sounding prideful, I would highly recommend Bob's Bible Basics, Revelation in 6 Easy Lessons.
Okay.
About an hour per lesson. I went through the book of Revelation.
Actually, I saw you post those videos. I haven't looked at them yet. But yeah, where can they be found at, Bob?
On my Facebook page, Bob's Bible Basics would be the easiest way to find them. And I am open to correction on anything I said that was wrong.
Okay. I appreciate that. And if you want to make sure that you spell Bob's name properly when you search him up on Facebook, it's B-O-B-M-Y-H-A-N. So look him there as well. Absolutely. Well, I guess that's it for now. So what are we going to be doing next week? Nothing. We're going to go ahead and take a couple weeks off and then kind of regroup as we get into January. I think the first Thursday in January should be the 4th. So all things being equal, Lord willing, we will continue our studies in January. And there are a couple other topics that that I want us to kind of look at. We haven't yet decided what book to go into next, so we need to have some discussion about that, look at where we have been, look at what we haven't done yet, and we'll come up with a plan for that. But the best way to find out what's happening next is follow us on Facebook. You can follow us at Truth Factor Live. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is also Truth Factor Live. We do have a website, truthfactor.com. And I will update that as soon as I know what topic we're going to be looking at next or where we're going to next, and just kind of check that every so often. If you want to download today's outline, you can find it there as well, and it'll give you a little better idea. Some of the things we really didn't have time to get into, but it would make for good study. If you'd like to take a look at it, I think it'd be very, very beneficial. So, all right. Anything else? Oh, real quick.
Have a great year, everybody. Thanks for a good year for tuning in with us.
Yeah. That's right. Send us your questions and comments, questions@truthfactorlive.com, or write Brian@truthfactor.com, Bob@truthfactor.com, the others you see on the screen there as well. Just let us know what you have to think. I'll be happy to bring it to a study. So what'd you just say, Brian? Let's repeat that.
Have a great year, everybody. Thanks for giving us a great year. Thanks for participating with us in these studies. And
that's right.
It's just some of you have been there the entire year, and it's been really encouraging. We really appreciate it.
Very much. Very much. So I appreciate it. All right. We'll see everyone in 2 weeks. See you next year. Bye-bye.